Late one night, Mrs. McDonald awoke to the sound of someone moving around in the kitchen. I'm Evelina Kay. I'm going to read a Haunted Canada tale from Haunted Canada 2, True Tales of Terror. There are true stories by Pat Hancock, and this story I'm going to read is called Home Invasion from Baldwin, Ontario. When John T. MacDonald moved his bride into the house he'd built near his father's, he was looking forward to a happy, peaceful life, raising a family there. He planned to keep farming the land he shared with his dad in the little village of Baldwin, not far from what's now Chatham, Ontario. And things went pretty much as planned until 1829. By then, the MacDonalds had 3 children, one still an infant. Jane, a teenage cousin of John's, was also living with them, helping Mrs. MacDonald with the children and the housework. But early in the summer of 1829, the MacDonald home began to play host to some very unwelcome guests. Late one night, Mrs. MacDonald awoke to the sound of someone moving around in the kitchen. Frightened, she nudged her husband awake, and they both lay still, listening in their bed, trying to figure out what was happening. The noise grew louder, as if several people were now trudging around outside their door. Then they heard their baby cry. It slept in a tiny room off the kitchen, and its cry was a call to action. MacDonald leaped out of the bed and yanked open the door to the kitchen. What he found left him stunned and confused. The room was empty and eerily still. After comforting the baby, the MacDonalds decided to keep quiet about what was happening, and they didn't tell their neighbors about the footsteps they heard marching loudly up to their front door on other nights that summer, or about how, every now and then, some family members sensed an unseen presence following them around the house. The last thing they wanted was to have everyone in Baldwin whispering about their house being haunted. But people started talking openly, not just whispering. One word got out about what happened in the MacDonald's barn late in the fall. Many of Baldwin's farmers were working together, bringing in the last of the harvest, and several young women, including Jane, had gathered in the MacDonald barn to make straw hats. Suddenly, without warning, a heavy log beam came crashing down to the barn floor, not far from the girls. Startled, they regrouped in another part of the barn and went back to their hat making. Not long after, though, another beam broke loose, then another. Unharmed but frightened, the girls scurried out of the barn and took shelter in the house. Feeling safe in the kitchen, they began to calm down, but not for long. Even though no gunshots rang out, bullets started piercing the windows, leaving small round holes in the glass. The bullets didn't whiz through the room, they simply fell to the floor after coming for the panes. But the young women feared for their lives. They fled from the house and headed across the fields to another farm. First, the neighbors didn't believe the girls when they blurted out what had happened. Then a young man who had stopped by the MacDonald house looking for Jane showed up. He had noticed the holes in the windows and had got inside to see what was wrong. He'd seen the bullets on the floor and had slipped one into his pocket. When he pulled it out, the girl's story started to ring true. It also started to spread. And before long, the community of Baldoon was abuzz with reports of the unnatural events taking place in the McDonald house. Over the next several weeks, more bullets flew through the windows, and the stones and lead sinkers used to hold down fishing nets. The scary incidents usually took place in the afternoon and early evening, so groups of curious neighbors were often on hand to witness them. They saw not just projectiles flying into the house, but also kettles of boiling water lifting off the hearth, chairs and beds moving as if being pushed around by invisible hands, and knives whipping across the kitchen. Amazingly, though, no one was hurt by any of this, at least not physically. The McDonald's were suffering. They could find no scientific explanation for what was happening to them, and they no longer felt safe in their home. Desperate, they turned to prayerful priests and ministers, psychic researchers, and spellcasting witch hunters to end their torment. But without success, if anything, things got worse. Small fires started breaking out all over, in closets, cupboards, and corners of every room in the house, and outside in the barn. Family and friends spent long hours on fire watch duty, rushing to doze in the nasty balls of flame whenever they mysteriously flared up. But one morning in the fall of 1830, the fires got the better of them. As the McDonald's sat in the kitchen eating their breakfast, the house began to fill with smoke. Escaping with just the clothes on their back, they joined the volunteers who raced over to fight the blaze as soon as they spotted the smoke. But their efforts were in vain. The house was left a blackened, burned-out shell, and not long after that, so was the barn. The people of Baldoon were quick to help McDonald rebuild and to let the family stay with them in the meantime. But it seemed as if the unnatural force that had plagued the McDonald for so long was following them. The neighbors, fearful of the flash fires and the moving furniture that invaded their homes too, eventually gave up trying to house the unfortunate family. John and his wife moved into a tent, and Jane and the children moved in with John's father, Danielle. But fires broke out in Danielle's house too, and it was only with the help of shifts of watchful neighbors that prevented his home from being reduced to ashes. Then, in the spring of 1831, as mysteriously as it had begun, the horror ended. Years later, the neighbors would give statements detailing all they had witnessed in the McDonald's house and in their own homes. Many of them would also note how calm and happy Jane had been throughout the horrible ordeal. Some students of paranormal see her behavior as the evidence that a poltergeist, a nasty, disruptive ghost, had been at work in Baldoon. Apparently, poltergeists usually pester people if a young person is around. But what the McDonald's suffered was much more than pestering. It was torture of the worst kind, frightening torment by unknown forces for no reason at all. The end.
Oh, gosh. I can't believe it's true.
Well, it is. That was over 100 years ago, though.
Headless Nun. French Fort Cove, Nova Scotia, and this story comes from the book Haunted Canada 2, True Tales of Terror, by Pat Hannock. As British soldiers were forcing Acadians, French settlers living in the Maritime Provinces, to leave Nova Scotia in 1755, a small group of Acadians living along the Miramichi River, east of Chatham, New Brunswick, were getting ready to put up a fight. They set up a camp at French Fort Cove, helping the French soldiers stationed there to reinforce a small fort and stockpile food supplies and ammunition. Then, always keeping a watchful lookout, they went about their daily tasks. But possibly expulsion by the British wasn't the only threat they had to cope with. Leprosy, a terrible flesh-destroying disease, had infected the community. Those suffering from leprosy had to isolate themselves on a small island nearby. A nun named Sister Marie Inconnue worked tirelessly around the cove, nursing the sick, caring for the elderly, and helping pregnant women deliver their babies. Everyone loved her, so she was the one with whom two widowed women shared a secret. They told her where they had buried the most valuable possessions of their families and friends, so soldiers couldn't steal them if the British attacked. Unfortunately, both women became ill and died, and somehow word got out that Sister Marie was the only one left who knew where the treasures were hidden. That's why two men, racked by leprosy, attacked her one night as she was crossing the footbridge over a creek running into the cove. Desperate to escape their wretched lives, And they were ready to do anything to get enough money to pay a ship's captain to take them far away from the Miramichi. The men grabbed Sister Marie and demanded that she tell them where the valuables were buried. When she refused, they took turns beating her. Still she said nothing. Finally, one of the crazed pair drew his sword and sliced off her head. Before he and his partner ran away, leaving Sister Marie's bleeding corpse on the bridge, he picked up the head and threw it into the creek. It was never found. Out of respect for her, the French soldiers garrisoned at the small fort eventually arranged for Sister Marie's remains to be shipped to France so she could be buried beside other members of her family. But it's said that without her head, she could never find peace there, and that her spirit has stayed behind in Acadia to search for it. A gruesome decapitation apparition has been frightening people around French Fort Cove, especially would-be treasure hunters, for more than 200 years. As long as she guards the hiding place, it's unlikely that the secret stash of valuables belonging to the French fort settlers will ever be found. Mm-hmm. Beware the Wendigo. The legendary Wendigo was a terrible creature. A shapeshifter, it was described by some as a hairy beast, 3 to 5 meters tall, by others as demon-like, with bones showing through its rotten skin. Whatever its shape, it had piercing eyes and a heart as cold as ice. It was incredibly strong, moved through the forest as fast as the wind, and could fly if it had to. Algonquians speaking First Nations people in eastern Canada greatly feared the Wendigo, and rightly so. Driven by a hunger that could never be satisfied, it attacked without warning and devoured its prey, and the food it craved was human flesh. Worse still, as if anything could be worse, its evil spirit could possess people often when they were asleep and transform them into violent, cannibalistic monsters like himself.
Good evening, my fellow fiends. My, my, how scary you look. In the mood for some ghost bumps? Come with me, if you dare, on a frightseeing tour of a haunted house. Many tales are told about this strange old abode where ghosts dwell, and witches scowl, and monsters growl, and zombies prowl, and werewolves howl. If you get scared, we can always hold hands. I have a box of them in the cupboard. So why don't you come on in? This way. Leak 'cause the roof's antique, and you hear a shriek, and your legs feel weak. It's a haunted house. There's a dismal moan like a weird trombone, and the rattle of bones and terrible groans. You are all alone in the great unknown, in a haunted house. The air is full of clammy claws that clutch you by the collar. So gargle night and morning just in case you have to holler. And leap as monsters creep with voices deep. Hobgoblins keep you from your sleep in the haunted house. In the dead of night you shake with fright as vampires fight and hold on tight just for a bite. It's a dreadful sight in the haunted house. The haunted house will welcome you with cobwebs in your face. It's just its way of telling you it's such a cozy place. Switch is out of reach. In the darkest niche is a cackling witch in the haunted house. Phantom creatures creep around with features truly gruesome. They all have supernatural powers and know how to use them. eerie gleam of a cold moonbeam. Stands a ghoul, you seem to be part of his scheme, and you wake with a scream from a horrible dream of a haunted house.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
Book review.
What's that Tea Witch book? Is that a book to review for Halloween?
No, not really.
Well, it's nothing really about Halloween.
Well, except for their birthday's Halloween.
Yeah. Tea Witches.
Like tea and witches?
Witches.
Twins.
Oh.
Twin witches.
Witches?
Because they're twins. But they've never really met each other.
Yeah,
they've got these two necklaces. And so Alexandra, her real name's, that's her name, but her real name is Artemis. They got adopted by people, and so they got their name changed. Mm-hmm. Cam for short, her name used to be Apola,
Why did they get separated? And adopted. Do they have real parents?
Yeah, their dad died and their mom's still living, but we only read the first one. The first one is called, The Power of Two. The book is about two girls, witches, and they are separated at birth, and if they meet, they can do great stuff. So Cam, she can see stuff before it happens, and Alex can hear stuff like people have thought but they haven't said it yet. So say someone thought about something really rude about her, she'd hear it. They can save lives and do all sorts of powerful things.
Do they have some challenges to get together?
Well, they're being sort of like trying to be tracked down by this guy that wants to kill them. Lord Tantanus or whatever his name is. They're two protectors. Aelina, a witch, and Karsh. They don't want anyone to know where they live. But at this one meeting, Aelina, she's supposed to spy on them and just, dress up as someone that just lives in the city in Marble Bay, because that's when Cam lives in there, in Marble Bay. But Alex, her mom died, so she moved in with Cam. And so...
And they know their sisters at that point?
No, not really. They're kind of just So they're getting a DNA test. But Aelina, she gave them away by doing this because she didn't know. It's it just came out of her mouth. There's this huge meeting of all these witches and wizards, and some people are working for Lord... whatever his name is, I can't really pronounce it. So everyone's at the meeting, and she's supposed to dress up and, spy on them. And so she says, what are you wearing in Marble Bay anyway? And so she gave them away. So now they're in Marble Bay and everyone can find them. It's a really good book. Okay. I love it. Tea Witches is by H.B. Gilmer and Randy Risefield. Now I'm going to read the back. Identical twins separated at birth for one very good reason. Cameron Barnes. Smart, upbeat, and popular, Cam is the best of breed all around. Except for one bone-chilling secret, Cam sees things happening before they happen, very bad things. Alexandra Fielding, spunky, punky, and sarcastic. Alex is all about making it from day to day. Life's tough, but Alex deals. Except for the weirdness, Alex hears things, the things people think but haven't said. If they ever meet, they can combine their powerful gifts and help people, maybe even save a life. They could figure out who they really are and who their parents really are or were. They could fall into very evil hands. Guess what? They're about to meet.
Hi, my name's Ron. I'm going to read a poem that I made up. In the mist of night, a black cat lurks around, checking every backyard.
A poem by Susan Musgrave. A gangst. Kulgana, black magic, rats inside. Up past the Indian graveyard, the sea has uprooted trees. The dead dream of nets flashing. Clutch against Kulgana, dark magic in a dying tongue. I dig for a darker stone, the kind rats are afraid of, black and silvery to keep out evil. I pick away the mirror flakes to hold against Kugana.
Play a composition I made up called The Seeds Rising.
Okay, The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered, weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, "tapping at my chamber door, only this and nothing more." Ah, distinctly I remember, it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember brought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow, vainly I had tried to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow, sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels named Lenore, nameless here for evermore. And the silken sad uncertain rustling of each purple curtain filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before, so that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, 'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, that this it is and nothing more. Presently my soul grew stronger, hesitating then no longer. Sir, said I, or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore. But the fact is I was napping, and so gently came your rapping, and so faintly you came tapping at my chamber door. I scarce was sure I heard you. Here I open wide the door, darkness there, and nothing more. Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there, wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the darkness gave no token, but the only word there spoken was the whispered word Lenore. This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word Lenore, merely this and nothing more. Then into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning, soon I heard again the tapping, somewhat louder than before. Surely, said I, surely that is something at my window latest. Let me see then what fret is, and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment, and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind and nothing more. Open here I flung the shutter, when, with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven, of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not an instant stopped or stayed he, but move mien of lord or lady perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of Pallas, just above my chamber door, perched and sat, and nothing more. Then this ebony bird beguiling my sad fancy into smiling, by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore. Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou, I said, art sure no craven. Ghastly grim and ancient raven, wandering from the nightly shore, tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore. Quoth the raven, nevermore.
Okay, so we want to dedicate this song in memory of John Corden, who was killed just a few days ago while riding his bike to work by a truck. He was knocked down by a truck. And also to Betty Blashill, both good friends of ours.
Took a bike ride yesterday, saw a funny world at play. Saw new bike lanes on a street, saw people and slowed down to greet. Green boxes next to blue and gray, posters for a car-free day. Saw families without a trace of fear and joy in public space. Pedal power in full sway, I saw things in a different way. Le monde à bicyclette. Le monde à bicyclette. Took a Gomburg, never shied away from what had not been tried, with faithful friends there at his side. Showed us we could turn the tide on Adam's mind in Kyoto and not go the way of the dodo. Burning passport declarations, buried car commemorations. Robin Hood through town he'd glide, inviting us along to ride. Le monde à bicyclette. Le monde à bicyclette. When the king of furniture decreed his actions immature, took aim at his crown and threw the people's gauntlet down, which some folks call buffoonery. How accurate they proved to be, for like the clowns of Yapery, his stock in trade was honesty. Sparking fires mirthfully to melt the ice of apathy. Le monde à bicyclette. Le monde à bicyclette. Sometimes statistics only bore him, so he perforated dull decorum, energized the public forum. What else can one do but adore him? Ask yourself and make a list, and for a spell unclench your fist, for laughter is an activist. Look up now, see through the mist. Fiction like a lightning flash, dispensed with humor and panache. Le monde à bicyclette. Le monde à bicyclette. I only saw him a couple times in person, where the tower chimes, raging at the climate crimes, with horns a-honking, words in rhyme. We're juggling by a tent for peace in frozen winter without cease. We wish for him eternal laughter, peace of mind in the hereafter, inspiring him as he does we. May we all forever see the moon a bicyclette. Le monde à bicyclette. Le monde à bicyclette.
myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.